So we're studying the Peli Yoetz, and the author of which is Rabbi Eliezer Papo. He lived over two centuries ago, and every chapter is organized according to the alphabet by the title, and the title of tonight's chapter is Orchim, which means guests, and we're referring to the mitzvah of Hachnosas Orchim. And it's fascinating that he opens up with the line, Mitzvah Hachnosas Orchim hi mitzvah rabba, which literally translates that the mitzvah of receiving guests is a great mitzvah. But there's more to it than that, because this phrase, mitzvah rabba, is singled out in Shas, in the Talmud, for actually two different mitzvahs. And one of them is the mitzvah piri v'rivya, which means bringing children into the world. That's one mitzvah, which is called the mitzvah rabba. And elsewhere you'll find that the concept of Shabbos is considered a mitzvah rabba, observing the Shabbos. This application of that very specific phrase, Tachnosis Orchim, is the chidush, is the insight here of the Peli Yoetz. That's not something that you're commonly going to come encounter. And what the Peli Yoetz does is, as he always does, and we've seen this over and over again, is he integrates many different statements of our rabbis, of Chazal, to give us a picture of a specific topic, in this case, Hachnosas Orchim. And here he quotes a Mishnah at the beginning of Peah. You may be familiar with this Mishnah because it's incorporated in our Sidur, and we recite this Mishnah on a daily basis in Shacharis. And the Mishnah enumerates those mitzvos which the principle, meaning the main reward, is designated for the world to come. And in this world, we get the peros, we just get the dividends. But the real principle, the main primary element of reward, is designated for the world to come. And on that list is Hachnosas Orchim. And then he goes on to tell us that how fortunate is a person who has the wherewithal to fill this mitzvah. He calls it Biyoso Rochav Beis Moshav, because he has a very large and comfortable house. And, you know, people sometimes who have such comforts and such luxuries, they don't necessarily want to have orchim. You know, they want to sort of close their door. They don't want to be bothered. But Chesed Gadol Hu Osem. But he has to realize that the stakes are really high here. This is not just a run-of-the-mill kind of chesed. This is a high level of chesed. And to gauge this chesed, the chesed is commensurate to the tzorech hamakabel, to the need of the person. Vidochko, and how pressured he is, meaning the person that has to find a place, a roof for himself. Vitzaro, and how much he's suffering because he needs a meal and he needs to get invited for a meal. So for example, he says, if a guest comes into the city, a stranger, and he's a poor person, he may not have the wherewithal to pay for a hotel to sleep in. Or he says, maybe the city doesn't have a hotel. Not every city has a hotel, he says. And a third option is, he may have the money to spend on a hotel, but it's eino lefi chvodo. Now, it's a person of that stature, usually has friends who would invite him. He doesn't have to go to a cold, you know, motel where they don't know him. In all these cases, if you can extend an invitation to him, he says that's a great godel achesed, that's a tremendous chesed. And ha'ish hama'asef oso abaisa, a man who takes him into his house, and especially if he's a ger, he's a stranger in an Eretz Nachriah, in a land where he's traveling through this land. He's on his way to a different country. He doesn't know the people here. He doesn't know the customs. He doesn't know to whom to turn for help. V'chiyim tze'ish, when he finally finds someone who's willing to invite him in, chayo yichya mamish, he gives him life. And therefore he says, I call this a mitzvah rabba, great mitzvah. Then he goes on to say that not only is this great mitzvah because it makes the oreach happy, the guest, but also it creates nachas ruach liyotzro. God, as the creator of man, will be very satisfied with this. Ubav ischaro, and therefore he'll be doubly rewarded. He'll be rewarded for that which he did for his fellow man, and also the fact that God is absolutely thrilled and satisfied with his actions. And even though the main brunt of the responsibility is on the shoulders of the host, but he says even the guest has a responsibility. Al horeach, it's a responsibility on him that lo yekel be'enof, he shouldn't consider this as something insignificant. The fact that someone invited him into a house, he should appreciate that. And therefore, for all Yisrael, he should lend a shoulder to help out with the, in the house. And on both the guest and the host, regarding both of them, we could say, Ashrei Ish Oeves Hashem, how fortunate is a person who loves God. And as a result of the love of God that he has, it's so intense, then Ein Tirchav Ein Kesef Nechshav Bi'Eino, he's not going to consider how much money he has to spend. That doesn't shine a candle. How much effort he has to put in. He's just totally motivated by this Ava, by this love. Lasos Nachas Ruach Liyotzo, because he knows that that's what his Creator wants him to do. And here, I would have started a new paragraph. In the printing that you have, there is no new paragraph. But before we get to the new paragraph, I want to point out the following. There's a famous story about Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer. I don't know if you've heard of Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer. He was the great Rosh Yeshiva of Eitz Chaim Yeshiva, which is probably located about, I would say by foot, about 40 minutes from here, not that far. And in its time, it was the greatest yeshiva here in Yerushalayim. And the story is told that once he was sitting in his living room, and one of his students came running in to tell him that another great rabbi, in this case Rav Soloveitchik, that would be my Rebbe's uncle, Rav Yitzchak Zev, the Brisker Rav, is walking up the street. And obviously he's coming to greet you. So the response of Mrs. Zalman is, this is like a yontif for me. You know, if I could receive this guest, this great guest, I have to put on my big day yontif. He runs quickly to change into his yontif clothes, puts on his beautiful yontif hat. And the students are very eager to see what happens. But to their dismay, they misidentified the person. It was not the Brisker Rav. It was just a regular rank-and-file Jew who looked a little bit similar to the Brisker Rav. And from a distance, they thought that's who it was. But they, you know, the Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer Shiva had an open living room so anyone could see what was going on. And the students noticed that Rav Issa Zalman was standing over this person, you know, and he was servicing him, you know, how do we say, what's the phrase?
Hand and foot.
And he was pouring the, you know, the drinks for him. He was, you know, feeding him. So when this guest left, the students found the opportunity to ask the Rosh Yeshiva the following question. They said, Rosh Yeshiva, we understood that if the Brisker Rav is coming, this is the way you have to treat the Brisker Rav. But for him, you know, good old Yankala, what? Said Rav Issa Zalman, in truth, this is the way we have to treat every single guest. The only thing is that we don't always have time to do it. We can't put in all the effort. But I had no excuses. I had already changed my clothes. I had all the food prepared. Everything was ready. It doesn't matter whether it was the Brisker Rav himself or it was somebody else. So this is the amazing attitude towards Hachnosis Orchim. Now the Peleoitz goes on to say the following. I would call this a new paragraph. He says, Kfar Omru Michlal HaZehirus Shalotehe Zohir Harbe. He says the following, that the mitzvah of Hachnosas Orchim is a little bit tricky. It has a downside, or a possible downside to it. When you invite someone into your house and you don't know him, but just he's never a down and out guy, and maybe he's homeless or whatever, you know, anything can happen, you know, once you let him into your house. This is a bit scary. So he says, therefore, you have to be careful. And he quotes a source from Sefer Ben Sira, and this, if you're following inside, goes on to page 37. Lo hakol tovi beisach. Don't bring just anyone into your house. She'im yodea bo, she'eno ish tov. And certainly if he recognizes the person, he knows he's not a good guy. Lo yivieu el beiso. He says, ubefrat, and how much more so if you invite this person in and he's not a good person, and you're together with your wife and your children, he could do anything and he could have a negative influence on your family. And if he invites this person who's not, he's not an upstanding citizen, to say the least, and he gives him a room to sleep in, he says, look what could happen as a result. He says the person might steal from you. He might try to start up with one of the members of your family. And he says that in such a case, choshtem, we have to be suspicious, even though we're going to be mechabed them. So he says there's a paradox here, a very sensitive, what we call thesis and antithesis. On the one hand, there's a mitzvah to be mechabed a person, you want to give him covered. But on the other hand, choshtem, we have to suspect that who knows what might happen. And here he quotes the following story. This is the story of Rabbi Yeshua. And Rabbi Yeshua received a guest. He apparently didn't know who he was. He didn't, you know, he didn't ask him for a bio or some sort of CV. He fed him. He gave him to drink. And then when it was time to go to sleep, he brought him up to the attic. Now, in those days, in order to get to the attic, up and down, you had to climb with a ladder. So he offered the guest a ladder to climb up to the attic. And then afterwards, Rabbi Yeshua took away the ladder. Right? So this person, this guest, this anonymous, unknown guest, had no way of getting down. B'chatzi alayla, in the middle of the night, the oreach got up. V'gonav kol asher babayis. He stole everything. Uksharotza lere, but when he wanted to get down, nafal min aliyah v'nishba raglo. He fell from the attic and he broke his leg. And Rabbi Yeshua said, ah, now I see what the Chachamim meant when they said that on the one hand you should be mechabed a person, I gave you all the food and drink, but on the other hand, choshtim, you have to be a little bit suspicious.
So did he sue him?
He sued him for everything. They locked him up in jail. In fact,
I'm sorry, did the thief sue?
There was no guarantee. He would have to have called Rabbi Yeshua and said, you know, it's time for after daybreak, bring back the ladder. He says,
well, not in America. You hire a good lawyer, and the burglars sue.
Yeah, I guess
because it's not safe for burglars,
right? And then he says, Matovim efshesholotetze eishes balabais achutza. Here he has another paradox. He says that on the one hand, if the oreach is not identified, we don't know him, maybe the wife should stay in the kitchen and she shouldn't present herself. Ubefrat kishehi mekushetes, and especially if she's beautifully dressed, denigre de yetzahara, because when this unknown person comes into a person's house and he sees the wife and she's all beautified, you know, she's all putzed up, ulai miyad hiru lo yetzah, he's going to start thinking all sorts of thoughts, and that's not good. Avol mitzad acher, he says, but the other flip side is yesh pseda. He says you're going to really forfeit something. Why? Because you're going to have to expel your wife and tell her, you know, I brought home this guest from the streets, and now you have to stay locked up in your kitchen or in your bedroom. He says, Ligarishas Ishtos, he expels her and she wants to come out and be with the family. He says he's in a bind over here, because on the one hand he wants to make sure that there's no tempting situation as far as the guest is concerned, but on the other hand, he has an obligation to his wife, and that's his primary obligation. And now he has to completely expel her. So he says that in such a case, what does the halacha tell you to do? He says, Yivchar lo li adam derech yeshara. A person should make this decision, b'derech yeshara, l'fi mashu adam, l'fi mashu areach. In other words, he has to take into consideration all the variables here and all the possibilities. And he should have in mind that he wants to accomplish two goals. On the one hand, he wants to make sure that everything goes smoothly here in this Hachnas Tzarka. But on the other hand, he wants to make sure that his wife could be participate in the meal. So I gave out a handout today, and I'd like you to turn to the back page of the handout. And if you turn it on its... if you turn it this way, I have it a little bit on a larger piece of paper. He tells you a story.
Which number is this?
I'm going to tell you in just a second. Oh, number 10.
See, the Arabs solve it beautifully. They stick her in a burqa. All we can see are her eyes. And that's the solution.
Okay. It's not going to work for us.
I know.
Right. See, he tells a story here about the Chafetz Chaim and Rav Meir Shapiro. Rav Meir Shapiro was the author, the creator of the Daf HaYomi. And at one point, Rav Meir Shapiro found himself in the neighborhood of the Chafetz Chaim, which was around Radin, a city in Lita. And he asked the Chafetz Chaim if he could have a meal on Shabbos in the Chafetz Chaim's house. And then, when the Chafetz Chaim says he'd be thrilled to host him, Rav Meir Shapiro turns to the Chafetz Chaim, and he says to him that my minhag on Shabbos is that the men sit separately and the women sit separately. So the Chafetz Chaim responded to him. And he said, if so, I cannot invite you for a Shabbos meal, because my wife and the respect that I have for her is greater than the mitzvah of Hachnasas Orchim. And my wife sits at my table. And this is so typical of the Chafetz Chaim, you know, putting all the emphasis on Shalom Bayis. Remind me about Hanukkah time. I'll tell you another story about the Chafetz Chaim when they were waiting and waiting for his wife to come home. And the Chafetz Chaim was very makpid to light Hanukkah candles at the earliest time. So the Chafetz Chaim had a proof from the Gemara that the mitzvah of Kvod Ishto, to respect his wife and Shalom Bayis, was greater than the mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah. So he said, I have to wait until she comes home. She didn't come home until after midnight. But this is an interesting story about Hachnasas Orchim. Getting back to the Peleoids. He says the most important condition in the mitzvah of Hachnasas Orchim, and I would have guessed to make sure that you offer him a good steak or some really good Coca-Cola, whatever is good. No. That's not what it's all about. Shemekabel eskol ha'adam besever ponim yafos. That he should receive the guest with a happy heart. His face, his countenance should indicate that he's thrilled that the guest is coming. And he says that that's even more important than the food that he puts on the table. He says, if I had to make a comparison between the following two paradigms of Hachnasas Orchim. Paradigm number one is the case of an ani, a poor person. He doesn't really have that much food. But he accepts the guest, the ritzui, with his glowing eyes, and he puts in front of him paschareva, just a basic, you know, dried spelt bread. But he does it with ponim yafos, beinayim yafim, and tov re'i. And compare that to a wealthy guy who puts out the most lavish banquet, but the ponim zafos. You can see on his face that he's clenching his teeth because every single bite that the areach takes is costing him money. He says better to be in the first category than the second category. And he goes on to tell you that im kasha b'einav lahotzi otzo meruba. He says that if it's hard for him in his financial situation to spend too much money on Hachnasas Orchim, he says, al yarbet b'hotza, he shouldn't get into a pressure and make this thing what we call in Yiddish an upkumenish, meaning it's a headache for him because he can't afford it. Let him be mitzamtzim, he says, let him give a little bit less than he'd like to give, because otherwise he'll be in a pressure. The Al Yasienu Yitzro Lomar, sometimes the Yitzhahara plays games and says, well, you know, Kedei LaHazmin Oreich, you want to be a big shot, you want to invite a guest, you better offer him the top, 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 the best of the best. And that's going to put the person into pressure, and he's going to be very sad about Hachnasas Orchim. He says, that's not the way to go. You spend the money that you can afford, even if it's very humble, it's a very modest amount of money. And he gives the example here, the Gemara says about Noshim, about women folk, that they are a name Tzoros B'Orchim. Why? What does that mean? That it sounds like they have a tzoros ayin. Maybe they know they don't give enough for the orchim. I know that that's not true. I know that that my wife, for example, will give tons of stuff for the orchim. Right? That's what we know about our wives, each one respectively. But it means the following: that sometimes the wife has to make a decision, given the amount of food that she has and what she can afford, and how to feed all the mouths of the family. She'll realize what's reasonable without getting into a financial pressure and debt to offer the orchim. That's what he says. Now, in the next paragraph, for a moment, we'll fast forward, because here he makes a gigantic point. Yeah. Joe?
David has a question. David?
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, David's
asking. Yeah, I was just curious, Robert. Is the mitzvah only regarding somebody who's in need of either shelter or food, as opposed to we all have guests, we have our friends with shul come for meals, is that also the same mitzvah?
I would say the following. The real McCoy mitzvah of Achnosas Orchim that we're talking about, that's a mitzvah rabbah, is because the person needs a place. For any number of reasons. He may be a wealthy guy, but he's out of town, and he doesn't know anyone, and we said there's no hotels. Mm-hmm. Then there's a secondary mitzvah. That's called Avas Reim. Actually, we had a whole discussion about that. Avas Reim means to look for any opportunity to get closer to a person, to increase and intense your friendship. That's a different kind of mitzvah. Hachnosas Orchim could be one of many different methods by which you can come close to a person. That's called yididut and friendship. But that's not what we're really talking about here, because here we're talking about the mitzvah on the highest level. As we said, you know, to go, to really push yourself, to save your upon your foes with happiness and joy for what he calls a mitzvah rav.
Okay. What happens, and does this qualify, if you have a perpetual Shabbos guest, because that guest has no other friend, no other acquaintance, no other place in terms of someone who would invite him? Does that qualify?
I mean, I would say that that's the greatest mitzvah of Achnos Orchim. If the person has no other hosts, and that you're the last resort
every week.
Yeah, this is and this is what we call a ben bias. I don't know if you've ever heard of that phrase.
Yeah.
A ben bias is someone who becomes like part of your family.
Okay.
Now, the question I would ask, Theda, maybe this was on your mind as well, but what happens if after a certain period of time, it's like, it's just too much for me. I can't handle it. I need new faces. You know,
it's
I,
not the new faces. What happens if that person is also, doesn't have Hakarat HaTov? Doesn't like this thing, you know, how could you possibly serve this food for Shabbos? It's not Shabbos stick. How could you do this? How could you
In such a case, I would say the following. I make 3 points. Point number one, the best method, I think, is if you'll, when I say you, it might be Joe and not you. I don't know, you know, in each case, it's you have to compliment the host. And again, what I mean to say is that you have to feel appreciative, and if you express that appreciation, maybe at some point it might sink in and he'll start imitating you. You know, if you become what we call in Hebrew a dugma, you know, a personal example, a set the example.
Rabbi,
assuming that doesn't work. No. Just hang in there. That's the first possibility. Now, if that doesn't work, I would drop down to the second possibility. The second possibility. And that is to try to get someone to intervene. If you could find the right person who could call this guest in, you know, because you can't do it yourself. And if it's a person that has wisdom and has diplomacy and sensitivity, hopefully that person will be able to give give this guy a musish moves, you know, and set him on the right path. If none of those options work, then you're left with the third option. And that's a very personal decision you have to make, which is similar to the paradox that we spoke before in the Peleoates. Very individualistic decision. You have to decide how to maximize your mitzvahs, your opportunities. You have to weigh one thing against the other. On the one hand, you feel deep down inside of you, this guy is an ingrate, but I'm doing a great thing for him. This is an amazing mitzvah that Hashem sent my way. On the other hand, you have to balance that with the feeling of resentment that's building up within inside of you. And if that resentment continues to build up and gnaw at you, then the whole mitzvah Achnas Sarkim is eventually going to just go up in smoke. So rather than wait until that happens and you get a blow up of some sort, you should begin slowly but surely finding a way of telling him that, you know, we're busy this week. You know, don't do it all in one shot, because if he's been visiting you for the last 6 months or 20 years, you know, and all of a sudden you say, you're out on the street, you know, that's going to be a shocker.
I can be very diplomatic, and I'm not fussy with my Shabbat meals.
Okay. Welcome to Manhattan.
I'd love to.
That's right, next Shabbos in Manhattan.
Right, next Shabbos in Manhattan.
Okay. Now he says the following. This I thought was very fascinating. Again, we're on the bottom of 37 if you're following the text. He says that one thing is clear. The mitzvah achnasis orchim requires a very great discipline, because let's be honest, he says, we had a rough week this week. I'm exhausted, I'm in tension, you know, I lost my job, or even worse, I don't like my job. Sometimes it's better to get fired than to live with a job situation that you don't appreciate. He says, afil yesh lo tzar belibo, the host is suffering from his own internal problems, his pressures, his psychological deep difficulties and challenges. Yesh lo kas belibo machmasei zesiva, he's carrying around anger. Not anger towards the guest, well, that might be in Thea's case before, but that's not the case he's addressing now. He's got his own anger. He says, how demanding of a mitzvah is achnasis orchim, it's unbelievable. Yasir kas milibo. Somehow he's for that period of time, call it an hour, call it 5 hours, whatever it is, he's got to overcome his kas. And al yara b'fnei oreach, he shouldn't show in front of the guest, el ponim sochakos. He has to show him a happy face. I mean, that will demand a tremendous amount of self-discipline. And the basis of this psak, of this ruling of the Peleoates, is a Gemara that tells us that the Oreach is very, very sensitive. The Oreach thinks that anything that goes wrong here, if the Baal Bais is angry, it's because of him. He points to himself. You know, this reminds me of the Rambam. The Rambam has a very interesting chidush, an insight into why Moshe Rabbeinu was punished for hitting the rock. And, you know, there are many, many different commentaries and different interpretations. The Rambam has a unique one. He says that the problem was not that Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock, but that he used the term Shimunah HaMorim. He says, listen, you rebellious people. And basically, according to the sheet of the Rambam, they were not rebellious. They were desperate for water for themselves, their children, their animals. And by calling them morim, they began to blame themselves. When you get angry in front of someone, very often that person blames themselves. That's the way we are sensitive. And if we could put the Peleoites on the side for a moment and pick up this back page that I wanted to show you, he says the following. In number 4, he quotes Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah was one of the great Rishonim of Spain. We'll call it 900, almost 1,000 years ago. And he says the same thing that we saw here in the Peleoates. It's just about 800 years earlier. And he says, when the Orchim come to his house, he should take them in, v'saver ponim yofos, with a happy face, a happy countenance. And what's critical here, he says, is that the Oreach feel at home. He feels comfortable. So he says, as soon as the Oreach comes in, put some bread on the table, give him something to drink, It could be that this guest is a poor person, he hasn't eaten, even if he's a rich person, he didn't have food. And not only that, here's the sensitivity. You and I might have said, well, if this guest is hungry, why didn't he tell me so? The answer is he's too embarrassed to ask. Therefore, you take the initiative and do everything with panim me'iros, with happy, lit up face. And he says, even if levavo atzev, he's really sad, the host is sad, v'daiga, and he's full of worries at that point in time. Yisachena, the hesek hadas means put it out of his mind, bifneim, in front of the guests. Because instead, what he should be doing is he should be focused on comforting the guest, yinachamim b'dvarov, v'al yisaper lifnei ha'oreach, kach v'kach iroli, k'tzei taluosav. You know, a normal person, if he's suffering, he wants to pour it out. You know what I'm saying? He wants to share it with others. That's a natural tendency. That's a deep psychological need. Now, if the host is going through a difficult time period, it's almost natural for him to want to pour out his heart in front of the guest. If that's the person who can hear what he has to say. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, that's the worst thing you can do. Ki dvarim elum shovrim es rucham. You might think that, on the contrary, the guest is going to empathize with the host if the host pours out his heart. He says, no, the guest has his own problems. And as a result of hearing the problems and the woes of the host, that's going to break his spirit, meaning the spirit of the guest. And not only that, kimiduma lahem, and he's going to come to the mistaken conclusion, ki bishvilam amar kain, that maybe he was telling him he, and I'm always shifting back from the host to the guest, but the host, in the mindset of the guest, the host is deliberately telling these woes, you know, telling the tales of his woes, because in some sense he feels that the guest is part of it. You know, he's also one of the causes. He says, in such a case, kim acha ein lo schar, he's really almost forfeited entirely any reward that he would get.
Because the guest is hearing this tale of woes, and he's saying to himself, hear this guy telling you about how bad work is, how, you know, he's losing money, whatever, in his business, and he's complaining to me really about the food that he's offering to right. me, the guest. I mean, that's the mindset of the guest hearing the tale of woe, for whatever reason, of the host.
So, Joe, what I would say is the following. The name of the game is sensitivity, but sensitivity to the extent that I have to, as the host, I have to dream up any concoction and get into the mindset. And again, when I say get into the mindset, I can't read the mind of the guest, but I have to assume everything. Anything that might cause I have to even dream up possibilities and scenarios that you know what? The guest is going to be uncomfortable. In the next line, he says, Al tish alo divrei Torah. You know, a lot of people, when they invite guests, the first thing they say is, let's hear it about Torah and the parasha. It's so common. Rabbeinu Yonah, who lived 1,000 years ago, tells us, don't do that, because you might embarrass the person. He says, not only that, lefamim, he says, not as a universal rule, but many times, roi, it's appropriate for the host, gam yesev im oreach lechol, he should sit down and join the meal. Because how comfortable do I feel if I'm sitting together with the host? And here I want to tell you an interesting story again about the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim, this is number 2 on your page, once had a guest in his house who was quite wealthy. And the guest said to the Chofetz Chaim, I'm very excited about your invitation, but I will only come if you promise me that you will receive a check to cover all your expenses. And this took place on Friday. The Chofetz Chaim said, fine. On Sunday, when the guest was packing his bags on his way back home, the Chofetz Chaim comes with an envelope and returns the money to him. And as soon as the Oreach starts refusing, he insists, betokef. Tokef means he's not going to let up, that he take back the money. So the guest says to him, I don't understand. On Friday, Erev Shabbos, he had no problem accepting the money. Says the Chofetz Chaim, I wanted to give you a feeling of comfort. I didn't want you to be upset over Shabbos, that look, I'm eating up from the Chofetz Chaim's money. So I gave you the misimpression so that you would have an enjoyable Shabbos, that I was taking your money. And therefore you had an Onik Shabbos, you enjoyed the food, you enjoyed the host, the Hatnas Sarchim. However, I never had in mind to take your money and take it back. Again, you see, make the guest feel, as comfortable as possible. In this case, to fake it as if you, the host, would accept money in payment, that makes the guest feel happy. Now, by the way, on the side, when I read this story, I had my own comment. What would have been so terrible had the Chofetz Chaim taken the money? After all, you know, the Chofetz Chaim was not a wealthy person. He lived in a little hut in Radin that probably looked a lot worse than Abraham Lincoln's log cabin. So, Vasa Geferlach, as we say, so take the money. You know, they, this guy's a rich guy. It's not going to dent a mark in his finances. But I'll tell you what I think is true. Again, it's just my own interpretation. As soon as you take money for a mitzvah, you forfeit the mitzvah. I remember a long discussion I had many, many years ago with my father, may rest in peace, who was the chaplain in the Coney Island Hospital, if anybody knows, in Brooklyn, New York. He was a Jewish chaplain for, I don't know, 50 years, I don't know how long. And I once said to my father, Dad, do you get schar for taking care of the Jewish patients? You know, he would daiga for them, he would worry for them, he set up davening for them. He used to invite me as a child. We have pictures from my youth because we used to have a model Seder for the Jewish patients before Pesach. And a million and one other things. So I said, Dad, but you get a salary from the municipality. You know, the Cornell Hospital is a city hospital. So my father said to me as follows. As far as the salary is concerned, all I have to do is say good morning to a patient, ask him if he needs anything, and go on. Anything beyond that, I'm doing L'shem Mitzvah, and I can get schar for that. So it's very interesting. It's a very deep philosophical question as to whether or not you can take payment for a mitzvah. And the truth is that if you get paid for a mitzvah, you forfeit the mitzvah. With the exception of the following, the rule has, every rule has an exception. The exception here is, if you go beyond the call of duty, meaning that your paid salary is to do X and you do X plus Y plus Z, that's a whole different story. Anything beyond the call of duty, you'll get scarf.
Do you not risk insulting a welcome guest, maybe even a friend, by first accepting and then refusing?
Maybe what you should do is tell the friend or tell the guest that, you know, you don't take money for a mitzvah. That's it. You know, he shouldn't be upset about that. You know, if he wants to give a donation to the yeshiva, you know, the Chofetz Chaim had a yeshiva in Radin. He was the Rosh Yeshiva. David?
I was thinking about the same year, a couple of months ago, we had talked about Emes. Here's a case where, right. Just what's the Emes in this? Just the Chofetz Chaim is certainly an Emes the person.
Right.
Was he saying the Emes is more complicated than just...
Yeah, right. As we said last time when we spoke about Emes, that Emes is very complicated.
Yeah.
Now, the Chofetz Chaim has a whole piece on Hachnosis Orchim, just a few paragraphs of which you have on your page. And he points to one parsha in the Torah. Who can guess without even seeing it inside which parsha in the Torah is the parsha of Hachnosis Orchim?
Yaakov and Esav.
Before Yaakov and Esav, either?
Abraham and Esav.
Exactly. Avram and the three wanderers, correct? So says the Chofetz Chaim, we have to read that parsha very carefully, because that parsha is like a Shulchan Aruch that outlines the laws and the rules that apply to this mitzvah. A fascinating approach, you know, to read a parsha in the Torah and be medayik every single word and every single part of the story to teach you something else. So he says the following. The first thing that Avram Avinu does, as the Torah tells us, is that he's sitting out in front of his tent on the third day of his milah. even though it's hot like anything out there. We had a few hot days recently, so I can feel the heat almost. Ulai, Avraham Avinu is thinking, maybe he'll see in the distance some passerby, and he'll be able to take him into his house. Says the Chafetz Chaim, from this we have to learn that the mitzvah of Achnasas Zorachim is not enough to be passive and wait for someone to knock on your door, but you have to actively pursue this mitzvah. Seek and you shall find. Number two, Avraham Avinu sees the three passers-by, rots across them. The Torah testifies that he runs to them. And for this we have to learn that the mitzvah of Achnasas Zorachim requires a great deal of effort, of enthusiasm, of energy. The next thing we find is nishtatech lifneim. He actually bows down to them. Says the Chofetz Chaim, this is not really appropriate for Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu is called by the Torah Nasi Elokim, you know, he's like a prince of God. But he says, when it comes to Achnasas Zorachim, don't have your nose up in the air, and treat this person as if he's your as if he's the brisker up, even though he's not the brisker up. You remember the story that I told you before. Then he says, the first thing that Avraham does is, as Rashi explains it, he tells Yishmael to bring the water. And Rashi says, "Kidei lechanech es bino." So when it comes to Achnasas Zorachim, we have to realize not only are we doing something that we believe in, but we also at the same time are educating our children. So get the kids involved in the mitzvah of Achnasas Zorachim. The first thing he brings for the guests is water. And the water has a twofold function. Number one, rachatzu raglechem, wash off your feet. And number two, drink from the water. Not from the same water, obviously, right? And basically he's saying that when you get a guest, if he comes from a long distance, the first thing you have to worry about is maybe he needs a bath, he needs a shower. He's completely, disheveled, or he's stressed out from the trip. He needs a good shower. I mean, it's almost as if the Chofetz Chaim was talking to us, and the Chofetz Chaim is talking about a story that took place thousands of years ago. And then, of course, to give him water to drink, mizen nilmal gamanach, we have to learn ourselves as the Chofetz Chaim, that we have to give food and drink for the guests, but we also have to give water for them to bathe in. The next thing, Avraham Avinu asks the Orchim, and he says to them, please come and join me for a meal. Yukach no ma'at mayim. He says, all I'm going to do is I'm going to put a little bit of water in front of you. V'achakach, and then Avraham Avinu says, then you'll go back to your, continue on the trip. So again, Avraham Avinu is sensitive to the fact that the guest doesn't want to impose. So therefore he tells him, I'm going to only do a little bit. And here the Chofetz Chaim quotes a very famous principle, Tzadikim omrim ma'at, V'osim harbe. They say, I'm only going to do so and so, but really, they're going to give with a full heart. Also, he tells the Orchim, Hishanu tachas ha'etz. In other words, rest up in the shade underneath the tree. And we zen nilmad, and this we have to learn from Avraham Avinu, that even before you bring the guests in to eat and drink, make sure you give them a little time to rest, to unwind from the trip. And I guess in our context, maybe we could talk about air conditioning, if they need an air conditioned room. And now we go on. He says, what was the Suda? Everything in the parasha says he did it b'mehirus. Over and over again, the Torah says that he rushed to do it. Why? To teach us Zerizus, with alacrity, with excitement, with energy and enthusiasm. This is what we need for the mitzvah of Achnasas Zorachim. And who stands over these three guests to serve them? Avraham Avinu bi'atzmo v'hu omed aleihem. And he's standing over them. V'shireis lifneihem. And he's serving them. And who were they? They were three nomads, Arabs. We don't know what they were or what they looked like. We know they were malachim, but that's not what Avraham knew. And he says, it says in the pasuk that he stood over them. Now again, I don't know how literally you have to take this, because if somebody stands over you, you get a little self-conscious. I remember there used to be a restaurant here in Jerusalem called Cow on the Roof. Is anybody old enough to remember that? No. Okay, I'm dating myself. Anyway, it was in the Plaza Hotel, which is no longer the Plaza Hotel. Now it's called, oh, What's it called?
The Italian.
The Leonardo. Leonardo. Anyway, it used to be called the Plaza Hotel. It was one of the. Yeah, the Plaza was considered, for especially for Haredi people, to be the top. Because the Heksha was on the top. It's right across from the chief rabbi. So the when you came into the Plaza Hotel in those days, you made a left turn and you were in the most the fanciest restaurant that you've ever seen, called Cow on the Roof. Cow on the Roof is based on a painting of Chagall, and they actually have the Chagall painting outside the restaurant. Again, I'm going back a couple of years. Anyway, my wife and I were treated to dinner in this restaurant, Cow on the Roof. Our host gets a phone call in the middle of the meal. They actually bring him a telephone to the thing. The chef himself brings out the meal, you know, one of those things, you know, that's the hot thing. But the only problem is the maitre d' is standing right on top of us, like this. He's waiting for some signal. What do we need? What do we want? I felt so self-conscious. So I said, you know, it says in the pasuk, "For who am I to lay?" You know, that Rabbi was standing over there, but you know, give me my space over here. I was afraid he's going to, you know, he's going to actually take something out of my mouth or something.
You know? You're using the wrong fork.
Using the wrong fork. So here I want to tell you a story. This is number one on your page about Reb Chaim Ozer. I don't know if you ever heard of Reb Chaim Ozer. He was the Gadol Hador about a century ago. He was the final word. And on Sukkot, he invited a guest, and it was time for eating, and he realized that Reb Chaim Ozer, that it's way too cold in the Sukkot for him, because he was in a very frail physical state at that point. He was a very old man, and he knew that for him, he would be what's called mitztayer. He would suffer from the Sukkah, and a mitztayer is potim in a Sukkah. The Oreach, on the other hand, was thrilled to be in the Sukkah, even though it was cold. He wasn't a frail old person. And therefore, the Gadol Hador, Reb Chaim Ozer, commands his household to prepare a Suda and bring it out to the Suda, to the Sukkah, for the benefit of this Oreach. A few minutes go by, and to the surprise of the Oreach, Reb Chaim Ozer himself comes to sit in the Sukkah and eat the meal. So the guest says to Reb Chaim Ozer, you yourself made a decision that you're potter from the mitzvah because you're mitzvah, you're not feeling well. So what made you change your mind? So Reb Chaim Ozer answered and he said the following. The din that a person is potter from sukkah because he's mitzvah, he's not feeling well, and the sukkah is very difficult, that only applies to the mitzvah of sukkah. It doesn't apply to the mitzvah of achnasas orchim. And now that you're my Oreach and you're eating in the Sukkah because you don't have a Ptur, you have to eat in the Sukkah. I also have to eat in the Sukkah because I have to be Mekayim in the Mitzvah. I was absolutely fascinated by this story. What I was wondering was, did Reb Chaim Ozer make a bracha asher kishon mitzvos tzivot alei sheva Sukkah? Because the deal is like this, that a mitztayer is potter min haSukkah. Let's say it's raining in the Sukkah. And I want to be a frumer, you know, I'm very machmir, so I'm going to go out in the sukkah, I'm going to eat in the rain, and I'm going to make a bracha. That's called a bracha of atollah. Because you don't have the mitzvah. Now, in this case, Reb Chaim Ozer paskin that he has to eat in the sukkah, but that's only because of what?
Yes.
Of the hachnas tzarchim, not because of the mitzvah sukkah. So I don't know if he made a bracha on the sukkah. That I don't know. Anyway. You know, one of the greats in contemporary Jewish psak today is his name is Zilberberg. He authors a book called Chashukei Chemet. So you'll see a number three here. He asks the following question: You have two chairs in your house. They're both shlemim. Neither of them are broken. But one of them is more fragile, and it requires a special care to make sure that it doesn't break. The other one is batuach yoser, meaning it's just solid, you know, it's
secure.
Now he invites a guest. So the questioner who turned to the Chashukei Chemet, he wants to know, which chair should I, the host, sit on, and which of the two chairs should I give to the guest? So Mamish, a Dakas thinker question, very very interesting, subtle kind of question. I never would have asked that question.
Yes, it's the solid chair.
Oh. So he says that Yilchora, you want to give the guest the solid chair because of the mitzvah of achnas sarchim, and that's absolutely correct. So give him the one that's more secure. But he says there's another reason why you have to give him the more secure chair. And that is because even though you own the chair and you have financial investment here, if it breaks, that's not your concern. Your primary concern is that the guest should not be injured. You know, part of the mitzvah of achnas zorachim is shmiras aguf, is to be careful and protect the oreach. So if you give him the less secure chair, it might just break. And who knows what's going to happen to the...
Yeah, we read this past Shabbos about the fence on the roof.
Correct.
But also there's another reason that the Baal HaBayit knows to be careful with the other chair. He knows exactly what to do.
Right.
He's more experienced with a broken chair.
Absolutely. Okay. Now, if you turn your page to the, tilt it over to the right side, you'll see number 8. Does anybody know who authored the Kedushas HaLevi? I'll give you a hint. He came from the city of Berdichev. That's like a big giveaway. Of Levi Yitzchak Mberdichev. So he's the author of the Kedushas HaLevi. In any event, getting back for a moment to the story of Avraham Avinu and the guests, he says the following, that it's very important within the context of this mitzvah achnasas orchim that the Baal HaBayis should not show his greatness in front of the oreach, because the oreach might get jealous of the Baal HaBayis. You know, when you invite someone into your house, it's very easy. Susceptible. I don't know what word is that he might get jealous of you. And he sees a hint of this in the story of Avraham Avinu. You may remember that we asked the question before, why is it safer who omeh aleihem, that he's standing over them, Avraham Avinu is standing over the orchis. So the Chofetz Chaim gave the answer that he's servicing them hand and foot, you know, making sure that he's right there, like the maitre d' in Calendar Room. So the Kedushas HaLevi, who was about a century before the Chofetz Chaim, he has a different take on it. And I need to introduce this by telling you Shivim Panim La Torah, meaning that we have to understand the Torah at many different levels. Very, very often, you know, we get stuck in a story and we think of it in terms of the physical reality and of the story, but the Torah is endless, it's eternal, and therefore there's symbolic messages in the story. So the Kedushas HaLevi claims that Vahu Omed Alehem, that Avraham Avinu standing over them, has a symbolic message. Now let me just see if I can shock you, because if I ask you a question and you give me the intuitive answer, then I can shock you by telling you it's just the opposite. So let's see what happens. Who would you say is greater? Man, a tzaddik, or a malach, an angel?
I don't know if I've heard this, but I think maybe the man is, because he can change his midot and try to achieve what is greater than angels cannot.
So you're a step ahead of me. I was hoping you would give me the intuitive wrong answer, but you gave me the right answer.
Because angels are programmed for what they're programmed for.
So do you know what that's called in Tanakh? When you want to say that an angel is programmed, that's called yeshiva. That's called sitting. Okay, a human being is described as an omed, as someone who stands, because he's on the move. He's got constant challenges, and he goes from place to place. On the other hand, a malach is called a yoshev. So let me read it to you inside. He says that it's a chiyuv on the Baal HaBayis to make sure not to show his godless, his greatness, in front of the oreach. Kidesha Oreach lo yikane es Baal HaBayis, he shouldn't be jealous of the Baal HaBayis. Vehine. Tzadik Nikra Mahalech. A tzaddik is considered, oh, I said, I made a mistake before, I correct myself. I said a tzaddik is considered standing. I made a mistake. A tzaddik is considered walking. He's in motion. Shaholech Tomid, he's constantly ascending mimadrega lamala from one level to the other. Malach Nikra Omid. This is a Poskim Malachi at the end of Tanakh. A Malach stands in his place. He doesn't move. He never gets to a higher and higher level. Kan. Rots Avram Avinu Shalo Yekanu Bo HaMalachim. Avram Avinu wanted to make sure that the Malachim would not be jealous of him. Because he's a tzaddik, and that means he has a greater level than a Malach. Therefore, Hislavesh Atzmo Bibachinas Malach. He made himself look like a Malach. Shu omeid, v'hu omeid alein, because the word omeid, standing, is indicative of what? Of a malach. A malach is called an omeid. V'zeu v'hu omeid alein. So again, if we translate this into real life terms, it's very difficult to imagine that, Avraham Avinu appears as a malach because he's standing over them. But in terms of symbolic message that the Torah itself, as an eternal book, wants to convey to us, the eternal message is that you have to make sure that you don't, in Yiddish we say prava. Prava means to exhibit godless, show that you're greater than the orech. All this is part of the sensitivity that one has to have. Okay, I'm going to give a chumash class in about 5 minutes. So if anybody has any questions, again, there's more to talk about here, but that's, I accomplished pretty much my goal.